Hi, I'm Robin Warder from The Trail Went Cold. If you are unfamiliar with my other podcast, I often cover stories from the television show Unsolved Mysteries. For the past 5 years, you've heard me talk about these cases on my own, but now's your chance to hear me have in-depth discussions about them with other people. I want to welcome you to my new project, The Path Went Chilly, where I will be discussing in-depth with my two good friends and co-hosts cases that I've covered on The Trail Went Cold. Meet my co-hosts. First one up is Jules.
Hi, I'm Jules from the podcast Riddle Me That True Crime, and I have a PhD in transpersonal counseling. I'm not a psychologist or a diagnostician, so don't get too excited, but I can't wait to analyze these cases with these two amazing humans. You've already met Robin, now meet Dr. Ashley Wellman.
Hi, I'm Ashley. I have a PhD in criminology, law, and society, and I specialize in trauma victims and survivors. I've spent a great deal of time working with families left behind after homicides with a cold case unit based out of Florida, and I'm also a professor of criminology. I'm so excited to be chatting with two of my best friends about the cases that everyone can't seem to get enough of.
We hope in doing so that we will have a clearer perspective of what may have transpired. Oftentimes, Ashley will be totally in the dark.
Jules and I will be telling Ashley a story she may not know much about, so all of her reactions are genuine.
We will be releasing on all major platforms April 8th.
We hope you will join us as we attempt to heat up some ice-cold cases.
The Path Went Chilly will be available every Thursday on all major podcast platforms.
This episode is brought to you by the Slash and Cast Podcast Network. Learn more at slashandcast.net.
Hello and welcome back to Reverie True Crime. I'm your host, Paige. The innocent life of a 6-year-old little girl was brutally taken in 2018 by a family friend, a teenager, who was obsessed with Slenderman. He also had intrusive thoughts about killing and raping someone. If you do not want to hear the details of a child's death, I do suggest that you don't listen to this particular episode. However, if you are ready, let's get into it. Alicia Sarah McPhail was born on October 22, 2011, in Glasgow Royal Infirmary to her teenage mother, Georgina, and her father, Robert, who was in his early 20s. Robert lived with his mother, his dad, and his girlfriend, Tony. His little girl would go see him and her grandparents every other weekend. Alicia was 3 months old when her parents separated. Georgina had another little girl in 2014 named Courtney. Alicia had gone to Chapelside School, and in 2018 she had just finished primary two. Alicia's teacher said that she was always smiling and so happy. She appeared to love school, and she really enjoyed writing the best. Alicia had a blast doing gymnastics and baking cakes. Her father, Robert, was living in Rothsay, the principal town on the Isle of Bute. Alicia was only 6 years old when she went to see her dad and his family for her 3-week summer vacation. She arrived on June 28, 2018. Aaron Thomas Campbell was born on May 7, 2002, in Shrewsbury, Shropshire, to his mother Jeanette and father Christopher. They would later have another child together, a little girl. Aaron was around 5 years old when he and the family moved to the Isle of Bute. When Aaron was growing up, he was experiencing physical and emotional abuse. His mother Jeanette was said to be an alcoholic, and they verbally fought all the time. Aaron used to harm himself. He was also diagnosed with ADHD and depression. Aaron went to Rothsay Academy, and by all accounts, he was a popular kid. He hung out with his group of friends, and they would all go to parties and drink. Aaron was physically active. He was in shape. He loved trampolining. He loved video games, and he wanted to be famous on YouTube, posting a few videos here and there of him trampolining and doing parkour. His parents didn't see the red flags, such as his infatuation with Slenderman, a fictional character that kidnaps children and traumatizes them. He was sneaking knives into the school as well. Later, a former friend of Aaron's told the Scottish Sun, quote, "He was supposedly doing voodoo stuff. I was worried when I heard. I never asked him about it. I just thought it was weird, but now I could believe it." A 72-year-old local named Grant heard that Aaron was doing terrible things to animals. Grant also studied criminology for 25 years. Grant said that Aaron's level of violence didn't just come from nowhere, that it usually starts somewhere and it builds up. In 2017, when Aaron was 15 years old, he was desiring dreadful things, such as wanting to commit rape. Aaron even went as far as sending a Facebook message to someone around the same time, saying that he might kill one day for the lifetime experience. As we have seen in many other cases, Aaron started to act out, and one of the things he did was start fires. He was eventually caught and forced to go into a rehabilitation program. Still only 15 years old in the winter months of 2017, he said that he was having sexual encounters with Alicia's father, Robert, and his girlfriend, Tony. He also bought marijuana from them many times, but they wound up getting into an argument in early 2018, and he stopped seeing the couple. Aaron's mother, Jeanette, also got involved and had a hand in her son not seeing Robert and Tony anymore. Not long after all of this, 6-year-old Alicia was on her summer vacation to visit her father and his on-and-off girlfriend, 18-year-old Tony, on July 1st, 2018. That night, Alicia was at her grandparents' home by the sea, tucked into bed, watching Peppa Pig. A typical night for any child her age. Robert went in to check on her around 2:30 in the morning and saw that she was fast asleep. In Rothsay, it was not unusual that you left your door unlocked or kept the key in the front door. That night, Robert left the key in the front door lock, as he normally would on any other night. Now, at 16 years old, Aaron got about 15 of his friends to come over to his house, and they proceeded to get wasted. The partying stopped before midnight, but at 12:30, July 2nd, a friend of Aaron's came back to the house, only to see that Aaron was curled up in bed and said that he was suicidal. Aaron said that he was so upset at his mother because they had been arguing on and off for the majority of the night. Aaron's friend was extremely worried for him. The friend decided to ask if Aaron wanted to come spend the night with their friends, and Aaron told him he could not come over because he was trying to get high. Allegedly, Aaron had been sending multiple messages to a few people wanting to know if they were able to sell him any marijuana. One of those messages was sent to Alicia's dad. Aaron also tried to call Robert's girlfriend, Tony, twice at 1:47 that morning, but she never answered. Aaron was determined to get what he wanted, no matter what it took. Aaron grabbed a knife from the kitchen and left his house around 1:54. Robert and Tony's house was only a 5-minute walk away, and Alicia's room was the closest to the front door. Aaron broke into the home easily, since the key was in the door, and when he saw the little girl, he said he saw a moment of opportunity. Aaron recalled that all he could think about was killing her once he laid his eyes on her. That night, he went towards Alicia, picked her up out of bed, and left. None of the adults ever woke up. He took Alicia to the ocean, carrying her along the beach. When she started to wake up, she asked Aaron who he was, and he told her that he knew her dad and that he was taking her home. From there, he carried the 6-year-old to an isolated area, proceeded to rape and murder her. Afterwards, he took his clothes off and tossed them into the ocean. He went home, took a shower, and then he went back to the crime scene to get his cell phone. Alicia's grandfather woke up at 6 in the morning on July 2nd, and he discovered that Alicia was not in the bed and realized that she wasn't anywhere in the house at all. Her little bicycle was still by the garden, and she had never run away before. Alicia's grandmother called the police at 6:23, and the family scattered to search around town and tell everyone about the child's disappearance. The grandmother posted on Facebook, begging anyone who saw her post to help them find Alicia. Tony looked at her phone and saw that Aaron had tried to call her, and she tried to call him back. At 9 that morning, she finally got a response. He texted her and apologized for calling, saying that it didn't matter now, adding 2 laughing emojis. She asked Aaron to keep an eye out for Alicia, and he responded, quote, "Oh, damn, I'm sure she's not went too far." Police Scotland were searching on foot for Alicia, while helicopters were looking from above. A Coast Guard volunteer started looking along the seashore around 6:55, and he spotted a kitchen knife not far from Alicia's grandparents' house. Many people from the community pitched in to find Alicia, and at 8:54 that morning, George Williams, a man who happened to see Alicia's grandmother's cry for help on Facebook, called the police, letting them know that he had found a little girl's naked body. Alicia was discovered in a wooded area where a hotel used to be. This location was barely 15 minutes from her grandparents' home. Alicia's mother, Georgina, was 70 miles away when she was scrolling Facebook and came across the post that Alicia's grandmother made. Unfortunately, that is how she found out that her little girl had died. She was then ushered to the Isle of Bute. An autopsy was performed on July 3, 2018. Alicia had suffered 117 injuries. Some of them were inflicted while she was alive, but others were more than likely caused by vegetation. There were injuries to her neck and face that pointed to someone grabbing those areas with their hands, and the injuries to her nose and mouth showed that she was being suffocated. Her private parts suffered catastrophic injuries. The injuries were more brutal than the pathologist had ever seen. The pathologist reported that her death was the result of a significant, forceful pressure to her neck and face. The murder investigation kicked off right away after they knew the results of the autopsy. Chief Superintendent Hazel Hendren said, quote, "Every available resource from across Police Scotland is being made available to this major investigation." Detective Superintendent Stuart Houston begged the public that if anyone had any information, to please come forward. The police examined Alicia's grandparents' house, patrolled the streets, and went door to door asking questions. A few parts of the island were cordoned off while forensic experts were scouring the areas for any evidence that they could possibly find. The investigators believed very early on that whoever killed Alicia, they never left the Isle of Bute. Aaron's mother, Jeanette, was one of the people who had volunteered to help look for Alicia. The police asked her if she had any information about what could have happened to the little girl. She knew her son had some kind of connection to Alicia's parents. So Jeanette looked through some of the footage from her CCTV surveillance camera that she had installed outside of her home. The video showed that her son left and came back to their house twice during the time that Alicia would have gone missing. She asked Aaron where he had been that night, but he swore he didn't know anything regarding the 6-year-old. Jeanette was relieved to hear that. She handed the video over to the police because she did not suspect her son had anything to do with what happened. Aaron was questioned by Detective Constable Gavin McKellar, and Detective Sergeant Stephen Hendry. The teenager didn't seem fazed or even slightly intimidated by them or their questions. He told them that he had been out purchasing and smoking marijuana. They were not buying his story at all, and on the 4th of July, Aaron was arrested on suspicion of murder. He was hauled to a police station in Glasgow, where he was questioned again. This time, all of his answers were no comment. On the 5th, Aaron was charged with rape and murder of Alicia MacPhail, and he was taken into custody for pretrial detention. Aaron went to the Greenock Sheriff Court on July 13th, and he did not propose a plea. Alicia MacPhail's funeral was on July 21st, 2018, in Rothsay. There was a candlelight vigil on July 21st as well. Hundreds of people showed up to the funeral. Alicia was laid to rest in Coltswood Cemetery. On December 10th, 2018, Aaron was present at the High Court in Glasgow for the indictment proceedings. He pled not guilty to abducting, raping, and murdering Alicia MacPhail. His trial started on February 11th, 2019, with Judge Lord Matthews presiding. The CCTV footage from Aaron's home was shown to the court. It showed Aaron leaving at 1:54 that morning, coming back home at 3:35, leaving and coming back again for a short amount of time before 4:07. Aaron said that he was in and out buying weed and looking for his cell phone. There was more CCTV video from members of the Isle of Bute community showing someone walking along the ocean shoreline at 2:25 that morning, and they were toting something in their arms. The pathologist even testified that Alicia's feet were clean and not injured at all, indicating that she was being carried around. Two young males said that Aaron sent them messages that night wanting to hang out, but they never met up with him. At the murder scene, there was a fleece jacket recovered, jogging pants, boxers, a t-shirt, and a kitchen knife. Aaron's mother said that all of these things did come from her house. There were fibers from the pants that were on Alicia's pajamas. Stuart Bailey, the forensic scientist, said that the DNA sample that was retrieved from Alicia's neck had a billion to one chance that it was anyone's except Aaron's. There were DNA matches on Alicia's face, 14 places on her body, and her clothes. A cybercrime expert testified that Aaron had Googled "How do police find DNA?" on his cell phone, and then he went to a website that was titled "Collecting DNA Evidence." Not only was he Googling that, he was also on Snapchat, according to a 16-year-old witness, and this was a few hours after Alicia's body was found. He sent a Snapchat video of himself to a group of 25 people, and it was captioned, quote, "Found the guy who has done it." Aaron attempted to file a special defense of incrimination, saying that Robert's girlfriend Tony was responsible for Alicia's murder. On the stand, Aaron testified that he and Tony were having sex in their garage that night after he messaged her, asking her to meet him for a cigarette. Aaron accused Tony of taking the condom and putting his semen on the 6-year-old's body to frame him. He said Tony went to Alicia's room and carried her off to the woods, where she then killed her. Aaron's lawyer even said that Tony was jealous of the attention that Alicia would get, also saying that Tony and Robert's relationship was an abusive one. Tony denied it all, saying that she loved Alicia to pieces. Alicia's grandmother got on the stand to say that Alicia and her father had a great relationship, as did Tony and Alicia. Since Tony was 18 years old at the time, her name was dropped by the media many times during the trial. Tony was asked how it felt to be blamed for a murder, and she replied, quote, horrible, especially when it's somebody that you do love so much. But she knew I loved her, and that's what I'm trying to keep in my head just now. Tony said that she was sad, hurt, and angry. Aaron's charge of attempting to defeat the ends of justice was dropped. If someone is found guilty of such a charge, they automatically get life in prison. Since Aaron was under the age of 18, the media was not allowed to report his name during the trial. Aaron was questioned for 2 hours during the trial and seemed to have an answer for everything that the prosecutor threw at him. He seemed extremely composed, not at all fazed, and reportedly, he was very articulate. When he was asked directly if he murdered Alicia McPhail, he said he never even met her, adding absolutely not, and he could never do that. He concurred that it would be evil if an innocent person were held responsible for the murder of a 6-year-old girl. Aaron said that he could bench press up to 110 pounds. The prosecution argued that Tony could not have picked up the 49-pound child and carry her all the way to the scene where she was found, but that Aaron definitely could have, easily. The trial went on for 9 days, and the jury deliberated for 3 hours. They came to the decision that Aaron was guilty on February 21, 2018. Lord Matthews said that the evidence against Aaron Campbell was overwhelming, and he had committed some of the most wicked and evil crimes that court had ever heard of in decades of dealing with depravity. The judge told the media that he could not think of a crime in recent times that has attracted such a revulsion. The case was so shocking that the media was comparing it to another case that I covered a few episodes back about baby James Bulger, whose life was taken in 1993. When the verdict was announced, Aaron did not react or show any emotions at all. Aaron's girlfriend at the time stood by him through all of this. She was devastated by what Aaron had done, but she still stood by his side. With the media frustrated that they could not use Aaron's name during the trial, after his conviction, a lot of outlets came together to make a legal bid for his name to be put out there due to it being in the best interest of the public. The local rumor that the person who committed the murder was a Syrian refugee who was housed on the Isle of Bute in 2015. There was no evidence of this, and right-wing commentator Katie Hopkins was getting a ton of backlash for pushing this narrative without any evidence to support her claims and opinions. Michael Russell, MSP, said the comments made by Katie were awful, divisive, and hate-filled lies. Ultimately, Lord Matthews reversed the naming restriction, which was the first time in Scottish history that this happened. Lord Matthews did so due to the unique nature of the case. The judge said, quote, "I intend to grant the application. The press may name the accused and publish images of him." Once his name was revealed, it opened the floor for people to have conversations about who and what influenced children. There were reports about how Aaron was addicted to violent video games, the Slender Man meme, and they talked about cannabis psychosis being connected to possibly this murder and others. There were conversations about how children should be treated when they commit very serious crimes. A local reverend told the press that the Isle of Bute is known as a safe place and that people take so much for granted there. During the trial, people were stunned and scared, saying that they did not feel safe in a place they always had prior to this. People in the community were even taken back by the fact that teenagers living on the Isle of Bute were engaging in underage drinking, sex, and drugs. The murder of Alicia brought to light the reality of what all was happening on the Isle of Bute. Local youth were beginning to get offers of counseling to help them process the traumatizing case. On March 21st, Aaron went to the court before Lord Matthews for his sentencing. There was a shocking confession by Aaron that was disclosed during the sentence hearing. A consultant, forensic clinical psychologist, and social worker named Dr. Gary McPherson had reports ready to reveal. Aaron told the doctor in detail about what he did to 6-year-old Alicia McPhail. He said that he was quite satisfied with the murder. Aaron even said that it was hard for him not to laugh during the trial. He said it took everything in him to hold back his laughter. Aaron told Dr. Gary that he continued to experience thoughts of killing and having sex with children and having sex with dead bodies. While Judge Lord Matthews sentenced Aaron, he said, quote, "You were found guilty of the abduction, rape, and murder of Alicia McPhail, a 6-year-old child. Merely stating that fact is horrific enough, but the circumstances surrounding these vile crimes and the manner of their commission have quite rightly aroused revulsion and disbelief that these sorts of things could happen. Alicia had just arrived on Butte to spend a holiday with her father and grandparents and had gone to bed apparently safe in her own room. No doubt she was looking forward to what the next few weeks had in store. Her father and his parents would have enjoyed every minute of it, while her mother and her family would have been counting down the days till they saw her smiling face again. Meanwhile, you attended a party at your own home, consumed alcohol, and then, on your account, to which I will return, went off in search of cannabis. You went into the house and then her bedroom. You removed her from there and took her to a secluded spot where you violated and murdered her in the most brutal fashion. The details of that were revealed in the evidence, and I do not intend to go over them again. It is difficult to imagine the distress which her family must have suffered, not only when she went missing, but when the awful news came in that she had been found dead. That distress can only have been intensified, if that was possible, by their finding out the extent of what you did to her, not only in the weeks and months immediately afterwards, but in the course of the trial. I have read statements by her parents and grandparents in which they have tried to express their loss and the emptiness which greets them every day. Just as I know that no sentence which I can pass will alleviate their anguish, so I know that mere words are poor reflections of it. The effect on the island community was profound. Many of them rallied around to help in the search, and the effects of those who saw Alicia in the woods will be long-lasting. I have never before seen a police officer almost break down in the witness box. So affected was he by the sight. The contrast between them and you cannot be more vivid. Your attitude was clearly demonstrated by the evidence that you posted an image of yourself in a mirror while making a joke that you had found where the murderer was hiding. The arrogance and callousness of that is breathtaking. Thanks to the dedication of the police and forensic scientists, ably assisted by members of the public, such as those who came forward when they found articles of your clothing on the shore, you were eventually brought to justice. Despite the overwhelming evidence against you, you did not plead guilty, but elected to go to trial. That was your right, and I do not increase your sentence because of it. However, it is symptomatic of your staggering lack of remorse. Not once during the trial did I detect a flicker of emotion from you, and that was also the experience of the professionals who interviewed you for the purpose of the reports, to which I will turn to shortly. Your defense was one of incrimination of a young woman, Toni Louise McLaughlin, and you gave evidence in support of it. It was a cruel travesty of the truth, which was understandably reported widely in the media, and left her open to suspicion at the very least, and quite possibly hatred, all of which was due to your perverted machinations. I am very grateful to Mr. McConaughey, or McConaughey, who today made it clear that she was completely innocent. Mr. McConaughey has said all that could be said on your behalf, entirely in keeping with the exemplary way the trial was conducted on both sides of the bar. All matters of fact, which could be reasonably agreed, were agreed, and the issues were well focused and laid before the jury. As I said to the jury before they returned their verdict, counsel do not make up defenses, but present the case on the basis of their instructions. It is obvious that your instructions were, and your evidence was, entirely in keeping with them, albeit it was a tissue of lies. It does not go too far, therefore when I say that I was shocked when I saw the contents of the Criminal Justice Social Work report and the report from Dr. McPherson, the consultant forensic clinical psychologist. Each of these reports contains clear admissions by you of your guilt. Not only that, and this is a terrible thing to say of one so young, but they paint a clear picture of a cold, callous, calculating, remorseless, and dangerous individual. I do not intend to go into every detail of the reports or of your admissions, since much of it would, I think, be distressing and much of it merely confirms some of the evidence which was led. However, I think it right that the public, and more particularly her family, be given some flavor of the contents. Dr. McPherson noted that you presented your account in a matter-of-fact manner, notable for the absence of any emotions. He recorded that you told him that in the 12 months prior to the murder, you entertained thoughts of doing something excessive, including rape. Your account in brief was that you had been drinking but wanted cannabis and decided to break into the house to get some. You took a kitchen knife because you wanted to protect yourself, but having gained entry, you left the house and disposed of it. You returned to the house and entered Alicia's bedroom. Amongst other things, Dr. McPherson records that you told him that you had consumed 1.5 bottles of wine between 8 p.m. and 8:30, but that you did not feel intoxicated, although you told the social worker that you still felt the effects of it. You were not under the influence of any illicit substances. He records that when you saw Alicia, your reaction, according to you, was as follows. Quote, a moment of opportunity. At any other time in life, murder wouldn't have been the conclusion. If I was a year younger, I don't think I would have done it. All I thought about was killing her once I saw her. So you told both Dr. McPherson and the social worker in some detail what you did. You said that Alicia was drowsy and became a bit more awake when you went outside. At one point, she even asked who you were and where you were going. You said you were a friend of her father's and that you were taking her home. You gave her your top because she was cold. I will not go into the horrific and cold-blooded details of what you said you did to her, but you explained that after you murdered Alicia, you threw your blood-stained clothing into the sea. You had a shower, and then you went back to where you left her to retrieve your phone. Dr. McPherson reports that you told him that over the next few days, you were totally unconcerned, other than to be mildly amused that the police had not arrested you. Two other aspects of his report are worth mentioning. The first is that you told him that at points during the trial, it took everything to stop you laughing, and you had to zip your mouth. The second is that you volunteered that you were quite satisfied with the murder. According to all the reports, you are not suffering from any mental health disorder, and indeed you are not suffering from any syndrome or disorder of any kind. On the other hand, you are completely lacking in victim empathy, the social worker noting your cold, calculating manner. The only sentence I can impose on you is detention without limit of time. In addition, you will be subject to the notification provisions of the Sexual Offenses Act 2003 for an indefinite period. However, I also have to specify a period which must pass before you can apply for release on parole. Whether you will ever be released will be for others to determine, but as matters stand, a lot of work will have to be done to change you before that could even be considered. It may even be impossible. The period I select is known as the punishment part of the sentence, and its purpose is to satisfy the requirements of retribution and deterrence. The parole board will deal in due course with the protection of the public. I have taken account of the circumstances of the offenses, the contents of the reports, and everything you said on your behalf. I am conscious that you are a child. In sentencing children, it has come to be borne in mind that they are not yet fully rounded, mature human beings. A child's best interests are a primary consideration, and the desirability of the child's reintegration into society must also be taken into account. However, the weight to be given to the various sentencing considerations will depend on a number of factors, including the age of the child and all the circumstances of the case. The nature of these appalling offenses and what I have read in the reports make it clear to me that reintegration and rehabilitation, while these are important considerations, are remote possibilities, and neither your best interest nor anyone else's will be served by a speedy return to the community. Nonetheless, the punishment part will not be as long as it would have been had you been an adult. Your sentence will run from July 6, 2018. You'll be detained without limit of time, and I fixed the punishment part at 27 years. End quote. John Marshall was the one who assessed Aaron after he was convicted and said interventions could start much earlier if people were to get their children tested to see if they had any traits of being a psychopath. This discussion ruffled feathers in the child psychology field. However, Lord Matthew said that he was not suffering with any mental illnesses, and even though his childhood was not ideal, that it was not a mitigating factor. Alicia's mother did not hold back her words during the sentencing, and she went on to tell the media that a life sentence should be a life sentence. She said that Aaron should have no human rights, and that he did not deserve anything because he is not human. Following the verdict, Aaron's mother said that she had come to terms with the fact that her son smoked marijuana, and she insisted that he was not a violent boy. She said, quote, "I wanted him to grow up in a safe place, a peaceful environment, and get a good education. He wasn't a violent boy. He was very normal. Yes, he smoked cannabis, but it's rife among kids on the island. I knew he was buying it from Alicia's father and Tony, but what could I do? If I went to the police, my son would be in trouble." End quote. As Aaron was being taken away to a cell, Alicia's family started to shout, "Evil" and "Beast." On May 2, 2019, the pretty pink memorial bench on the Rothsay Walkway was revealed to the public. June 20, 2019, Alicia's school opened up a playhouse, which was constructed in her memory. It was beautifully decorated with artwork made by her fellow classmates. The community had donated money to help make this possible. There was a memorial service for Alicia that took place at the school, and the McPhail family went as there was a song sang and poem read for their little girl. September 10, 2019, Aaron appealed his sentence, and it was successful in reducing the 27-year minimum down to 24 years. When Aaron is 40 years old, he will be eligible for possible parole. There were three judges that agreed and ruled that the sentence Aaron had been given was too harsh for his age. However, they did not deny that Lord Matthew's recommendation of Aaron never being released was valid. Aaron is serving his time at HM Young Offenders Institution, Polmont. As soon as he turns 21, he will be taken to a prison for adults. Also, in September of 2019, Alicia's mom, Georgina, created a charity called Alicia's Beaming Smile. Sourcing from the Huffington Post in 2019, Alicia's mom said, quote, "Words cannot express just how devastated I am to have lost my beautiful, happy, smiley, wee girl. I am glad that the boy who did this has finally been brought to justice and that he will not be able to inflict the pain on another family that he has done to mine. Alicia, I love you so much, my wee pal. I will miss you forever." The McPhail family said that they cannot believe they will never see their wee angel Alicia again. They miss her so much. They hope that the boy who took her from them is jailed for a long time because of what he has done to their family. The McPhail family said that Alicia may be gone from their lives, but she will always be in their hearts. In March of 2020, Aaron was the subject of the show Kids Who Kill, Evil Up Close. It was on the Crime and Investigation channel. Alicia's mom, Georgina, spoke out against the decision to air the documentary and pleaded with her real family and friends not to watch it. She started to ask everyone to drown out Aaron by flooding social media with pictures of Alicia's smiling face to remember her sparkling personality and how happy that she was, to remember only the good and not giving Aaron Campbell the attention that he craves. In May of 2020, Aaron spent his 18th birthday all alone in prison. The rumor is he's the most hated prisoner. He is not allowed to communicate with other inmates. He was attacked and is constantly threatened. There are even other sex offenders in the same prison who want to get their hands on Aaron. Due to this, he has been in solitary confinement. He has two officers assigned to him as protection when he has to walk around outside of his cell to go see the nurse or if he has visits with his lawyer. Aaron does not get many visitors, but as we have seen with other killers, he does get mail from people who are attracted to him. And that does it for today's episode. Thank you so much for listening. Please remember to lock your doors and your windows. Stay aware of your surroundings. Stay safe and take care. I love you guys. Until next time.